Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you gotta go ahead. Am I ready?
Go ahead.
Your full name?
Yeah, my full name is Peter Steger, no middle name. And I was born in Austria.
Austria? What town?
And Lauritz is the name of the town.
Spell it.
Lauritz is the short name. And it's near Salzburg. That is it. There was the biggest city there around there, Salzburg.
When did you leave there?
I left in October in 1910.
How'd you come to America?
Well, I was working in the coal mines in Germany, and I heard the fellas talking about how they do in America, you know, the coal mines, and I was always interested in coal mines. I was working in a deep mine, you know, and hot. We worked practically naked there, and I wanted to get out of there. So I probably saved my money. And in 1910, I decided I went home to see mother and my family first. And then I thought, well, I don't know. There was not much work in the town where I was, you know. Cutting wood in the timbers or so, or working for a farmer. And I always had to rustle for a job anyway, so I went out into coal mines. Well, anyhow, I want to go to America. And I finally decided I had enough money. I went to Hamburg and I got a steamboat that later on it was sunk. I saw in the paper, Graf Waldersee. And I bought a ticket for Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
I landed in Philadelphia. And
what year?
It was in 1910.
1910.
Mm-hmm. But the date I don't remember exactly. I know it was in October, and I don't remember just exactly what the date it was. It took us 12 days to get to Philadelphia. And then I went to work in a coal mine. I was looking for a coal mine, you know, and I couldn't talk English. So one fellow gave me an address where there was some Austrians, you know, they talk German, you know, and so I could talk and find out where there was a coal mine, or a fellow could get a job. Well, you know how I did. And I was only a winter there. I worked in a place called Schorf. It was a water place, you know. It's too long a story, you know. It was not much good. And I didn't. There was a lot of water in the spring when I got in there. I got disgusted. Anyhow, another fellow came over, a friend of mine, and I wrote him first that he shouldn't come to the place where I am. Evidently, people are nice, you know, and everything is fine. But as far as making any money, we done better in the coal mine over there, you know, in the way. So he and another fellow, they started out and they didn't go to New York or Philadelphia like I did. They landed in Texas.
Orleans?
No. He did Houston, but no. And it was in Texas. Well, anyhow, they came up to Lincoln, Nebraska, the two fellas, you know. And they worked on a farm, and they liked it very well, and there was a room for another fella, you know, a farm. And I thought, gee, Merry Christmas, that might be all right. I see the country anyway. Maybe I hire on that farm. I'm no farmer. I'm a coal miner, you know. But so anyhow, I wrote the fellow that I was interested. I asked how much they pay. And $25 a month, room and board, you know. And that I came on then, and of course, that is too long a story. I didn't work very long. Then we had to harvest herring and corn. Then it was all corn fields, and we had about 8 or 10 mules there. We found and hot, and my feet were all blistered. And I said to the other fellow, I said, I don't want to stay here. I said, I'm not a farmer. I said, heck no. And I guess it was there about 5-6 weeks. And then I told him that I want to quit. Well, the farmer, he said that he raised me $5, you know, he went up to 30. No, I wouldn't. I'm not a farmer. I know it. I'm looking for a mine. So I did. And the other fellow quit too. So we went to, I was always looking for a mine. And well, somebody told me that in California there was mines, you know. And so we went to California. And anyhow, we, in Sacramento, I asked there was any mines, you know, mines all around, but I can talk, you know, and find out nothing. that it was up against it. He said there was a, down in the Mojave Desert, there was a gold mine, you know, and Ranchburg was the place. We went there, and but anyhow, we didn't get on there. So we went back and worked for Miller and Lux there, and well, anyhow, I drifted up to Seattle and to Bremerton, and I worked on a dock. They put the concrete dock into the bay there, and I worked there. And there's where I met a fellow, and he says he was in Alaska. I said, where? In Juneau, he says. Oh, Juneau, where is that? Alaska. Yeah. So, well, how is everything? Oh, well, he says, it's pretty good. Well, how is it? Underground work? Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, that suits me fine, but underground work. I'm not afraid of that because I'm used to that. Well, he says they paid $2. A day on room and board, and Sunday and every day. He says, all you got to pay you for your tobacco, which you want to spend it. And so I thought, Jiminy Christmas, I get rich quick there for $2. I never had any more than $1 on board myself, so far. So I got to go to Alaska, wherever that is. And he told me that, oh, yeah, you buy a ticket here on a boat and go to Juneau. So I did, and I came to Juneau. It was February.
The name of the boat?
The boat was the Bertha.
Bertha?
Bertha, a wooden tub. And I was sick Bertha. All the way up. Bertha was the name, I know that very well. Anyhow, so I got acquainted with a fellow by the name of Ed Robinson on the boat, talking, you know. He said, he told me once, oh, he says, he was way up north at one time, he says, and we talked, and I said that I going to ask for a job in the mine there in Juneau. And so I asked around where to apply for, and I found the place. Oh, the fellow said, no, he says, we just laid off 50 men, he says, this time of the year we don't hire so many men. So I didn't have a job. So I walked by the boat again. The boat was still tied up here there. And Ed, this Robinson, he was out on deck, you know. He says, hey, young fella, he says, did you get a job? You know, he was anxious to know. He was heading for a cannery, see, someplace on the way. No, I said, I didn't got a job. I said, they said they laid off 50 men. He says, well, what are you going to do then? Well, I don't know. I said, what was that? How far does this boat go? Oh, he says, oh, it goes up there, a place called Seward, and maybe turn around and come back. Well, how long does it take? Oh, it may take a week, he says, before it comes back. And, well, he says, what are you going to do then? Well, I'm waiting for this boat to come back again and come back to Seattle. But I intended what else would I do? There's no job here and don't know nobody. So, well, he says, I tell you, he says, if I was young as you are, he says, I wouldn't mind going up north. Oh, north, where's that? Well, a place called Fairbanks, he says. Oh, I said, any mines up there? Oh yes, gold mines. So, oh boy, Fairbanks, I gotta go there. Well, I said, how much does it cost to get up there, and how you fella get up? And so I said, well, he says, you would have to go to Valdez, he says, a place called Valdez. He says, this boat goes by there, he says. Oh, well, what then? Well, then you have to go on the trail, he says, to Fairbanks. And it's 363 or 5 miles to Fairbanks then. Well, I said, how much would it cost then? He says, you got to walk there, there's just a trail, he says. And well, I said, how much would it cost to get there then? Well, he says, if you was very economic, about $100 to $120, you could get to Fairbanks, he says. He says, there's roadhouses, he says, and you get a meal on the bunk, on the breakfast. Well, so I could afford to do that all right. I said, when is that boat going? Well, that boat goes pretty fast, pretty quick, he says. If you buy a digger right away, it's going to pull out. So I went back and got a digger, say, on the boat. And I went to all this. And so I got to all this again. And I never saw so much snow in my life since that, then, at that time in all this. Even the Christmas, there was a couple of houses I saw they had, and upstairs they would go in there from on top of the snow there, you know, at the door upstairs.
That must have been still
February yet, but probably the end of February. Anyway, and I went into a saloon there, and I had a beer and something to eat, and I asked where the trail is to Fairbanks. Well, they showed me there, over there, you're going across there, and then keep it going, you can't miss it. There was no any side trails, neither. until you get to a roadhouse. The roadhouse was Camp Comfort. It was the first roadhouse. It was about 15 miles away. And I had a big sack, you know, I doubt I have to have a lot of clothes, you know. Even had to lay the boots that I never had any use for it, you know. And a lot of clothes with me. And so I walked and I got to the roadhouse, all right. And he says, hey, young fellow, where you think you're going? And I said, I'm going to Fairbanks. With that sack there, he says, you know, I have a great big sack on. Yep. And there we are. He says, I tell you, he says, you never get to Fairbanks with that sack, he says. Oh, I said, I don't know, I may be tougher than you think. Yeah, he says, you may be tough, but not that tough, he says. And he showed me, I go, I remember this. He just don't like that, he had a button, he says. When you get to Fairbanks, he says, you won't be any bigger anymore than the button in my pants, he says. And I always remember that yet, you know. Well, I ditched the sack there, and tickled the roadhouse. I asked the fella there. Anyhow, so that was that. And then the next day I went up across Thompson's Pass. There was a house up there, but it was sticking out from the snow. And I was ready, you know, I had the big pack yet, and it was moonlight. There was a snow slide down there in the house, and I seen that there, and I had matches and I had candles along with me, you know, I doubt needed. Anyhow, I took off my pack and slid down there, lit the candle and slid down there, but down there was a bunch of snow that slid down, and there was no stove or wood or anything. Mm-hmm. But I sat there, and finally I was sweaty, you know. Gee, when the Christmas, I didn't know the cold if I tried to stay here when I got to get out of there. And I scrambled up and went on into Ptarmigan Trap. That was the next one. But I was getting late there. And then, anyhow, the next one, I left my sack there.
You left the sack?
Yeah.
What did you replace it with?
I said to the roadhouse man, I said, say, he says, you wouldn't have a sugar sack or a rolled oats, you know, I don't know how that comes to a bag, you know. I said, I'm going to leave the sack here. I said, I can't make it. I said, I don't pack it anymore. I said, all I want is a little sack. I said, to put my shaving stuff in there and a couple of bare socks and some hankies and things like that. I said, and that I sling over the shoulder and go. What am I going to do with that? Well, I said, I'll leave it here and I write to it if I want it. You know, if you should send it. Well, he says, I send it, he says, next fall after freeze-up, he says, on a stage. He says, if you want it, and he says, and told him, I said, if I don't hear from you, he says, I give it to the Indians. And never heard of it, of course. So I came in 12 days then.
12 days?
Yeah. Met a roadhouse every night, you know. From
12 days from here?
No, from Valdez, yeah. Oh, yes, from Valdez.
They can
all
fire.
Yeah. No,
can you name the roadhouses in succession? Tikal was...
Tikal, yeah, and then Kulkana.
Kulkana?
Kulkana.
Copper Center?
Copper Center was there, Copper Center. And then, what is the...
Sardo?
Yeah, Sardo is one of them, but I don't, in succession, Sardo and...
Paxson's,
I remember Paxson.
Myers?
Myers, yeah, that's on the bottom of a hill there, is Myers. I remember I slid down to whatever was Myers or else.
Was Upper Tonsina there?
Tonsina is one too, yeah, Tonsina. There was Tonsina.
And then Myers.
And Myers.
And then Paxson's.
Paxson's.
And what was next?
Now what was the next?
Yost.
Yost. Yost was one, yeah, Yost. Yeah, Yost. Now what was...
Yost.
Yeah, there was... I remember that. Yost sounds familiar.
Black Rapids came.
Black Rapids and Black Rapids. That's another one.
What year was that again?
11?
In 1912. 12. Yeah. And,
They still kind of cross over towards Burt Lake, didn't they? I mean, they went by Washburn and that way in the winter.
I couldn't figure out where I walked on the rivers and on a couple of lakes. And I couldn't, I went with Alfred, my oldest boy, to Anchorage with a car, you know, several years back now. And I can't imagine where I walked anymore. Mm-hmm. It's up and down. And
you made that trip alone, did you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember where the road, where the highway is now.
Yeah.
It was all kind of, it wasn't familiar anymore. Donnelly Dome, Donnelly Roadhouse was there, two ones, Donnelly Dome. And then...
Delta.
Well, wait, now they cut off Delta. Was Delta,
Delta
there then?
No, Delta.
They used to call it McCarthy.
Deals Cash was about...
Huh? Cash?
Deals
Cash, yeah. Yeah.
Well, where'd they turn off and go towards
Deals Cash? Well, now, Deals Cash, as I remember, he only had a tent on some books in there. He was right on that. He had a tent on
some.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Deals Cash. Yeah. And I don't know about the Birch Lake and Harding Lake. I don't think I got near it. I must have gotten around some place there. I didn't.
Well, I don't know if that trail was going by there.
I know Munson's Roadhouse.
Yeah,
Munson. That's
Salcher. That was the Salcher.
Do you remember traveling down on the overflow or down on the ice of the Delta River? Do you remember traveling for miles on the river?
Yeah, on the river. Yeah, on the river.
Mm-hmm.
There was lots of people on foot and horse sleds at that same time, wasn't
there? Yeah, there was.
The trail was well marked.
Yeah. The trail was marked, oh yes, yes, sure, you couldn't.
Now that brought you to Fairbanks.
That brought me to Fairbanks, yeah.
Where'd you stay that first night?
The night, I don't remember yet. I remember I was hungry, and the first restaurant that I went to was Foster had it, I remember afterwards. What was the name of it? It was alongside of what is now I can't remember anymore. I think I slept there too. They had an upstairs. Sometimes I just can't think of anything.
That's right.
Of the name. But it is one of the first places I hit in town of Fairbanks.
And your first job?
The first job was, I went out to Esther looking for a job. And, he promised me a job. Well, not got no job today, but stick around a while, tomorrow maybe. So I said, anyhow, I stayed about a week there. And, but then I decided that they had too many big sweets there, and I wasn't, they thought I may not be strong enough, you know, it was all underground work, pick and shovel and wheelbarrow. There was no other work, you know. But anyhow, I didn't get a job. Before, there was a kind of a roadhouse at Esther Siding, Bill Estes. I don't know if anybody know any. He died since Bill Estes had it. And I went in there and had a cup of coffee before I went up to Esther. And he asked, where are you going? Oh, up to Esther. I was looking for a job. So when I came back, I went in there again. I thought, well, it's quite a ways away from to Fairbanks yet. I'd like to have a little lunch. And I went in, and he asked if I had a job. I said, no. Well, what are you going to do then? Well, I don't know. I said, I had a job. I said, I'm going to Fairbanks, and I don't know. Well, he says, I tell you, he says, I got a lot of wood to cut. He says, I got a wood contract there, he says, but I couldn't give you any money until next fall, next winter, when I sell it out to the miners, he says, for boiler wood. But I got all kinds of wood to cut, he says. I got two Finns out there cutting, but they want to quit. He says, I don't know. He says, did you ever cut any 4-foot wood? Well, I said, in the old country, I cut some meter. You know, meter is not much, it's not far away from 4 foot, you know. And I said, I can cut the wood all right. Well, he says, I don't know. I said, I wouldn't have enough money to get the equipment. I need a tent and a cottonwood fences and tools. Crosscut saw and file and axe and splitting balls and whatever you have to have. Well, he says, I tell you, he says, I could give you a letter of credit, he says, to E.R. Peebles. He says, you get anything you want, he says, and I write to him that anything that you want to order, you know, they should put you up together and send it out, and then we go out to the hillside where you cut wood. So, well, that is better than nothing, you know. So I got an outfit there at E.R. Peebles' store, where Nordell Hotel is now.
Nordell Hotel.
Yeah, it's now Nordell Hotel. Anyhow, I cut wood there, and then I cut wood 110 cords, mm-hmm. And then it was the Fourth of July. Fourth of July.
So you came to town to celebrate.
Yeah. And then I want to go out to see what mining is like. The mosquitoes was bad, you know, and I had about enough of the wood money. And I take a chance. I thought, well, I was going to go and work to Fox. And there, then, you know, to Fox. And, Larry was his name, and his first name, I don't know. I met him in Engineer Creek. He says, hey, he says, where are you going to go? I said, I'm going to do this, looking for a job. So I went to the Fox store, and I left my sack there, my bedding, you know, clothes, and I asked where I should go to ask for a job, and I saw over on the hillside there, there was some dirt coming out of the a big tin pole, you know, and so I went out up there, and I went over there and asked for a job. I'll put you on a night shift. All right, he says, you'll be here for supper. He says, 6 o'clock. All right, so I got a job. And then I saw, down in the creek, I saw a boiler house and some steam popping up to beat the bands of the scrapper, see. I thought I'd go down there too. And there was a fellow sitting there. And I said, I wonder if there's any chance to get a job here. And he looked at me. He says, are you good with pick and shovel? I said, oh, yes. I said, I would do my best. Where's the boss? The boss is right here, he says. He was wrapping up pipes, you know, steam pipes. Oh, well, he says, I'll give you a dry, he says. For supper, 6 o'clock. It's night shift, so there's a night shift too. Well, as it happened, that the mail carrier, I met him again. He says, Shorty, he says, did you got a job? I said, I got two jobs. I said, one job, I said, is over there. I said, where you see the dirt coming out, he said. I told him, and one is down there, where the boiler house is there. So I don't know, it's night shift on both sides. I said, I don't know which place I should go. And by gosh, I guess he gave me the right steer, right? I don't know what I should say. He says, I tell you, he says, young fella, he says, I would pick that fella there, what the boiler house is, he says, that's Wagner. He says, he's a hell of a fella to work for, he says, but your money is good. And here, he says, up there, the Bigelow Bench, that was the Bigelow Bench, he says, you know, he says, they got one foreman, he says, and a bunch of bohunks down there, and they run you out of there if you miss a couple of trips to the shaft, you know. He said it exactly what he meant, you know. He says, so by gosh, I said, I'll go down to this one. So I did. Anyhow, I stayed with him there for summer. And the winter took out a little dump. In 1917, I decided to go to Marshall, you know, that was something new then, you know. I want to go down to Marshall, maybe get a lay or something. He was working a lay winter dump shop after about Fox there, you know, a couple of winters, and maybe wages, you know. And then in 1917, after we had our dump sluiced up, one of my partner went to Ruby. He was there once before, so he went to. But I didn't know Ruby. I want to go to Marshall. We came down on the Schwatka. Oh. The Schwatka was sitting in front of the NC at that time. Mm-hmm. I went down to Schwatka.
You get paid for your wood cutting?
Oh yes, yeah, that Wagner that I started to work, he bought all the wood, and I got the money there, and I worked that winter for Wagner too, sinking shafts, he had lots of ground, and, So
this brings you to Marshall?
That's brought me to Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, well, it's too big a story then, from then on. Anyhow, I from Marshall, I teamed up with a guy No, I don't know. It is a typical story, you know. The guy wasn't much good, you know. And he had a boat, and I asked Chris Betts. He had a store down there.
Chris Betts?
Yeah.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah, about it.
I met him when I came to the country.
He did? Yeah, he had a store down there in Marshall. The place where he was mining, they called Jungletown. And it's up the Yukon and over to the site where he was mining. But there was no charcoal and no lead to be gotten. There's only two claims that he was working on. Had enough men, you know. So I teamed up on a prospecting trip with another guy. So that he had a boat. And he says he floated down from Ruby. He says, I had my breakfast in the restaurant there and walked down to the Yukon. Running by there, there's a fellow standing up in a boat. He says, hey, he says, good morning, come down, have a cup of coffee. Oh, I said, I have breakfast. I said, I'm all right. And well, he wanted me to come down, so I went down there and he was talking. And he wanted to go prospecting. I said that I was looking for going to prospect in some places, no drop here or some place. And well, he would, he too, you know, seems like a heck of a nice fella. But he said he didn't have any money, and I doubt it, you know, he's a good fella. He go team up, you know, he had a boat. But anyhow, when I left Fairbanks, I had $2,500. I had $1,500 in the First National Bank.
Ooh.
And I had $1,000 in the Washington, Alaska Bank. Anyhow, I want to take that along. I went to the First National Bank and wrote out a check for $1,500 and nothing done. He would put it out in $20 gold pieces. You couldn't get no paper money for love or money, you know. That's all you get. And I had two little gold books, you know, ready for it. And so I had $1,500 and $20 gold pieces. So I took that in there and tied it up and in here. Pushed the cord like that, you see. And then I went over to the Washington, Alaska Bank. They're almost across there. And I wrote out a check for myself for $1,000. And Blicker and Collins, you know, E.B. Collins and Blicker, they worked the summer before, and they want me to work for them. And to fire the boilers, they had two boilers, you know. And, so they paid me off on that bank. See, they was doing business on that bank, so how it came that I had $1,000 there. So on the teller, he made quite a rumpus to paying off that check, you know, $1,000. He says, you don't need that money. And oh yes, I said, sometimes it comes handy with a have a little cash there. I said, well, he says, I'll give you a letter of credit. No, I'll take the cash. And he said, oh, that's foolish. And so I said, I'll just give it to me. I said, and so he gave me the $1,000, but to the $20 gold pieces again, but you didn't ever want to put it in here. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I just want to say that I couldn't. The bank, the Washington, Alaska bank went broke. I found out after I got to Iditarod.
Oh no! Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that went broke.
Mm-hmm.
They broke the bank. but anyway, there. That this fella, you know, I team up with. He seems to be a very nice fella, and he want to go prospecting, and I want to get the rate of the gold money there. See, the $20 gold piece is $2,500. So I went to the post office, Fortuna Ledge, they call it.
Fortuna Ledge.
Yeah, Fortuna Ledge. And I asked the postmaster if I could exchange. The $2,500 worth of gold into money orders, $2,500 money orders. Oh yes, sure, if you're willing to pay for it, yes, I thought. I said. So when I couldn't get rid, I gave it up a couple of days, trying to get rid of the fellow that he wouldn't see it, see?
Yeah.
But he was like a dog, after me all the time. I couldn't find him. We went to home prospecting, and he was right behind me when I signed the money. And well, there was nothing to it, you know, and we're going to put that in here, and no more sticking out of my
pockets.
But anyhow, so we went. Chris Betts said that he had a store up there what was it now, below?
Russian Mason.
That's right, the Russian Mason, he said. And he had an Indian. He said, you get all the grub there if you want to, and the tools. I said, oh, I'm going to have tools and so. So I bought an outfit there, and we put it in the boat, and we started up. About 6 miles up, the Kiko River comes out here. Goes through a little lake first. But anyhow, we went up Kiko River, and the fellow here, he wouldn't do a thing. He wouldn't even pack a gold pen or a pick or a shovel.
Mm.
It just made the lunch, you know, and I had no help, whatever. Mm. And besides, he said, well, he says, the money started to bother him.
Oh.
And he mentioned several times, he says, well, he says, supposing, he says, if you, something happened to you, he says, if you would, you would drown, he says, who is going to get that money?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I said, I said, if nobody else but myself can get it, he's seen that it's made out to where I did it, or the post office, see, my name, naturally. Well, it didn't seem right to him that nobody could get that money. I said, no, if it isn't Peach Dagger, I said, then nobody get it. That is, Uncle Sam is going to wind up with it. If I wasn't, I would die. Well, every now and then he mentioned something about it again, and he was no good whatsoever, see, and I got disgusted.
He was figuring.
And he was figuring. And one evening I said, John Bisek was his name. He was a Slavonian. He's a catch. I said, John, I'll make you a proposition. I said, the boat belongs to you. Yeah, yeah. He said, the boat belongs to me. That's all he had, you know. And the tent and the grub and the tools and everything, that belongs to me. Yeah. I said, if you let me have the boat tomorrow morning, I said, you can have the tent, the tools and the grub and everything. And I leave you my gun on the ammunition. And I float out. I go out to the Yukon. Oh, yes. Oh, right, I can make a raft, he says. You know, we had ropes and nails and all kinds of stuff for making a raft. And he had up there for good to last him into the winter, I guess. So he was satisfied. Oh, he was happy that I'm going to get out of here. And I floated out to Russian Mason then, see, and got there was a boat coming from below there, and left the Indian, you should holler if a steamboat. Oh, thanks, I guess that's good.
And you had no power in this little boat that you went up to Iditarod with?
No, I didn't, went up to Iditarod with that, with this here boat. I went out from Kiko River, drifted out, see, out to the Yukon, down to Russian Mason. And a big boat came up. I don't remember the name of the boat that's coming by. The fellow there that was in the roadhouse, I had supper there in that night in the bunker. And I said, if that boat should come, holler. He says, yes, I haul a steamboat, you know, the hauler there. And he did. And I got up, and went on that boat for Holy Cross. And I got off in Holy Cross and then went up on the mail boat up to Iditarod.
What year did you say that was again?
That was in 1917.
17.
Yeah.
I thought the bank, I thought the Washington Alaska Bank first failed in 11. It went into receivership then, and that must have been it must have been the tail end of that receivership, because you see Barnett skipped in 11.
Yeah.
With the money the first time, and then they...
I hear that story too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then there were some of the town merchants. I think Dick Wood was one of them. And a few others, and they got together, and they tried to pay off the bank's debt quite enough, but they struggled. But that was in 1970. Well, that was when Marshall was struck, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In 16, I think.
A year before, they was working there when I came.
Oh.
In 16.
There were plenty of men in the camp down there then.
When I got there the following year. Much going on. There were two claims that was working.
They had a pretty wild state.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Of course, if you walk far enough, there was always room for another set.
If you want to stick, but nobody else wants it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you took the steamer and went to Holy Cross.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the boat anymore. Well, it was a stern wheel. And then I went up on the mail boat, the gas boat, the Sea Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Jack London probably.
Sea Wolf is sunk and her hull's laying in Nome Harbor. Right now.
This is a gas boat, you know. And Ira Wood and Frank Larsen owned it. They owned the Sea Wolf, and they had a barge there too, you know, they pushing a barge up. I went up there, and then Dick Button, he says, did you have any money there? No, I said, $1,000. He says, they told me then that they went broke, that cashier there in Iditarod, in the Miners and Merchants Bank there.
That was the last, Marshall Stampede was his last class of Stampede was, of any consequence.
You made one camp anyway. Yeah,
more than
one. Yeah. Did. Oh, yes. Well, and then that fellow, well, anyhow, I went out to flat there, and I worked that summer for R. Welsh, and I bought a little cabin up in Flat Creek, and after freeze-up, I came down for some more grub to Flat. And here, I went into Manuel Gulati's store, and here comes this fella, Pisek, see, that John. He come there, and when he saw me, he came down, rode his arm on me, and kissed me, with the tears rolling down, you know, and told me what happened. He'd cut down the tent and the stove he left there. He had two cooler cans stuck together and a little chimney. Anyhow, he came to a flat with a leg of a dog. He went over the hill from the creek where I was up there, see? And he called Stack. Carlstack was the other. Well, he came out. He marched over. And he was at the... It seems like he was a brother of... But the Indians, they want to get rid of him. Of the guy. They didn't like him. They gave him a birch bark sleigh there. And the dog. And the little dog food. And the little girl, and they told him, you go across here, and gave him the direction to Flat, or Iditarod, you know, what it's him. So he started off, and he got lost. It took way longer than he should have. And And so he had run out of crop, and he was eating the dog fish, you know, and the dog got the backbone of the fish, see, the bones. And the dog got poor all the time, the dog couldn't pull the sleigh no more, and he had to turn the dog loose. Finally he thought the dog is not going to come. The dog would come up to his camp during the night, see, all in, see, starving. And he was afraid that he may not come anymore, so he shot the dog. And he came with a leg.
Eating the dog.
He was eating the dog. And he came with a leg to flat. And at the mouth of Cottonwood Creek, he had a tent, you know, he had a tent there. He had the tent cut down of 6x7 or something, you know.
No wonder he threw his arms around you.
Yeah, so he didn't have nothing, see? Yeah. Well, I said, all right, I said, I didn't want him in my cabin up in Flat Creek. I bought a cabin up there. And I know that the fellow isn't much good, I know that.
You wouldn't get him out.
But anyhow, I said, all right, I go with you to Tom McMahon. I said, Tom McMahon had a store. And I said, I stand good for a girl, I said. So I went with him. I said, Tom, I bought some grub from him. I said, Tom, I said, as a fellow, I said, we was out on a prospecting trip, and he came in now, I said, and he, oh, thank you. I said, he needs a grub, I said, and I said, I stand good for him. Well, he said, Pete, he said, I'll give him anything you say so, you want. I said, I stand good, whatever, if he shouldn't, but I think he'll pay you when he can. And anyhow, it was over $200 by spring. He had to get another $50. What besides the first time, you know. And I went to Dave Stromberg. He was operating up there, you know. And I went to him. I said, Dave, I said, would you give this here John Visick a job? I said, he needs it pretty bad. And he says, whenever I put down men, you know, in May, early in May, he says, I give him a job. All right, good. So I told him, I said. In the meantime, he was staying in the tent. But he had enough grub, seemed to that. So I was working up in some of the association, you know, of Al Wirsch, and he got a book for Stromberg. He worked for Stromberg. And the war was on, you know, then, he was always pro-German, see, and the crew hated him, see, the guy, he was, didn't want him. And they went to Stromberg, yes, and Stromberg fired him, see. He'd been there a little over 2 months, they told me, he put in, and that would have been, he got $150 a month, you see, he got over $300 in cash from Stromberg. But anyhow, he got fired, and I don't know just what it was towards fall, you know. And I came down to Flat, and I heard up in Stromberg's Marietta, they call the claim, you know, where Stromberg was working. I said, why is John Pisek? Oh, that's wonderful, you know. He says, he got fired. He says, he got fired. Oh. So when I got to Flat, I went to Tom McMahon. I said, Tom, I said, I hear up the creek that fella John Pisek, he got fired. Did he come up and paid you for the job? Oh, no, he didn't. He came here, yes, he says, and he got the gun. He had the gun, my gun. It was a practical new dirty rifle, you know, carbon. He wanted to give me the gun when we was there the first time for grub. And I said, Tom, I said, I got some, you know, I got some to pack. I said, can I leave the gun here? Oh, yes, he says, I hang it up in the warehouse. And that was that there, and Reverend Doubleton had no use on summer for it. And he came for that gun. And he says, Pete sent me to, told me I should take the gun up to him. He says, and of course, he says, I gave him the gun. And then he escaped. And that was that. Well, I said, I told you that I stayed good. And I said, he gave me the bill, you know, and I paid him, gave him the check. And that was that. And that winter, you know, there was two Italians. I was prospecting on one side, on a claim on the other, on the other side. And they invited me for spaghetti dinner, you know. And so I said, all right. And I said, by gosh, Giuliano, I said, you got a rifle there just like I used to have. I said, I had. I said, when did you buy about that? Oh, he says, last fall, he says, a fellow came, he says, he sold it for me for $20. Oh. He says, so he saw, I said, this gun is my, I said, can I take it down? No, you're sure. So I took it down, and sure enough, this was my dirty. Luckily, so I thought, well, I probably was lucky that I came down the Kiko River. I probably would have stayed up there.
I bet you didn't see any more of John Pizza. It was worse than
Your next move from Flat was where?
Oh, yes, Flat. Flat. The next move that Flat, well, I got, in the meantime, my girl wanted to come over. You know, the war was over in Austria, so she wanted to come over, and we were riding for them back. And so in 1920, I owned some ground up there, or rented it in 1920.
Where?
In 1920, up at the head of Flat.
The head of Flat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I bought an interest in there. And I went out by way of Rainy Pass. Over the trail, that was to Anchorage and then on. But in Hull, my wife, we got married and we came in.
Where were you married?
We got married in New York.
New York.
I went as far as New York to meet you.
To meet her.
She came there, yeah. And then we came on together to Seattle.
To Seattle.
Mm-hmm. And to Seattle, and it was too late to come in over the trail, you know. Like, I went out, and she came later than she figured. She had to be in things in Copenhagen quite a while before she got away. And anyhow, we went then from Seattle to Skagway. And
what boat?
On the Jefferson.
Jefferson?
Yeah, on the Jefferson.
And you got off at Skagway?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was on the first day of May in 21.
21.
Yeah, first day of May 21. And then we came on to Whitehorse. And in Whitehorse we was 10 days. We stayed in the Whitehorse Inn or the hotel, what it was. And then we was waiting for the ice to go out of the Lewis River. They call it now Yukon already, it seems to me, on the map. Isn't it Lewis River? Yeah. We went down on Lewis River on the gas boat. The gas boat down to Lake Labarge.
Loon? Was the name of it the Loon?
I don't know the name of the boat. It's a gas boat.
No, the steamer, or the gas boat, the gas Loon, out of below end.
It could be. I don't remember that. But anyhow, we got down to the upper end of Lake Labarge, and they had some blanks. We shafted blanks onto the ice and got off. And we was not alone. There was some Chinamen there, the fishermen. They was gone down to Yukon working for a cannery. And there was a Ford truck pulled a sleigh, you know, a double sleigh with planks on there. and we got on that down and went down to the lower
Labarge.
Lower Labarge, and we stayed there 4 days there, and they had a whole boat in there. So the boat in Massatlin was the name of the boat. And then we went on the Massatlin down to Hutalinka. And there was a big boat in the Canadian.
That's where the Lewis River starts.
Is that what it is?
Hutalinka,
yeah, Hutalinka. There was a big boat there, and we got on there. And we got on that boat, we went to as far as Tanana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it went all the way down the Yukon, you know, and down to Tanana. And when we in Tanana, there was the Seattle number 3 came from Fairbanks. The court party was on there. The court party went to Flat. There was Church Brunel, Grace Fisher was there.
Oh, the court party.
The court party, yeah, they had court, you know, up and flat. They came every year.
Grace
there.
Fisher was on it?
She was the clerk of the court, yeah. And she was my witness. I took out my first papers in 1917.
Right.
I went there, and she was my witness, and she said, then, you know, that I'll be your witness. And E.B. Collins, he was assistant district attorney.
What do you know?
Then, you know, and he was, and then I had to have 3 men that know me to be witness. So anyway, that was that.
Now, we haven't had your wife's name yet. We want to know her name on this tape.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Barbara Steger, Barbara, Alton Hoover was at that time.
Spell it.
Barbara.
Barbara?
Barbara.
Oh, Barbara Steger.
Yeah, that's it. Oh yeah, I didn't tell you when I hauled him out, you know, because she was in 1925, when she had the second baby, she ruptured herself. She didn't want nobody to know, you know, and but anyhow, she got ruptured. And she suffered bad, you know, and I said, we sail out our little mining layout there, we gotta get out to a doctor, and she can go on no longer, you know, she was bothered bad and cried all the time, and I said, this winter, we're gonna go out, and we had to freeze up, you know, we sold our mining layout there, what we had. And we got to go to a doctor. So we got some dogs. And we waiting for the first mail carrier to come and to see how the trail was. And he came, well, he says, when you get to Roosevelt Creek, he says, the creek should be frozen over when you get there. And so anyhow, we waited a little while. It's gotten cold. It's gotten 40 below.
We're going from where to where now?
Going from Flat to Nenana.
Oh.
That time, when the first time I went out, when I went out to get married, we didn't have that trail cut yet, see. Mm-hmm. I went out over Rainy Pass to Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And this time I would have gone up north work off the coast of Krim.
Yeah.
And come up Lake Manjumani.
Manjumani.
That's right.
Nenana.
And to Nenana. And so we had to come there, went up.
How's your tape? How much tape you got left?
Maybe that is enough.
Pete, before you get on, I'd like to have you tell them about this trip from McGrath to Anchorage, where that guy was afraid. He wanted to know if your dog was afraid when you come to the place.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget that. That's a little color.
That was a I went out to get married, you know, on the way to Anchorage, I went out of Rainy Pass. One roadhouse man, he was a little Italian, and Pilock, he said, Pilock's roadhouse. Before I got there, there was Victor Turk owned it, and he had another fellow on that when I came by there. Mm-hmm. He says, tomorrow night you'll be at Tilak, he says, and he'll tell you that Victor Turk killed this Finn. The Finn, you know, came in. The Finn went out every year, he rustled some gold dust, you know, showing so many ounces around over and wherever he could buy it. And then went out and kind of paid for his trip, you know, and came in with the money. But anyhow, they told me that Pilak said that the Peter Turk killed the Finn. I don't remember the name anymore. He had a Finnish name. He says, and the Peter Turk said he never got to his roadhouse. He said, Simon Roadhouse. It was the name of the roadhouse. And so the other fellow said he never came to his roadhouse. Pilak said, well, he says he had a big breakfast, he says, and he had a little pack on his back, and he had a 22, he says, and he whistled and went out here and went up the side hill, he says, a picture of health, he says, the Peter Turk he killed him, he says, because he claimed he never got there. But anyhow, the other things, when I came, he was very friendly, and he says, hey, he says, go in and have a cup of coffee. I didn't tend to the dogs, he says, well, all right, I said, well, fine. And then when he came in, he says, hey, he says, how did your dogs act, he says, when you came up down the left, him there, he says, oh, how do you, yes, how do you act, I said, what do you mean, was he scared? No, he said, scared, no, tired, I said, he was tired. I said, otherwise I would have been here earlier if the dogs weren't too tired. What I ask, he says, is because a friend Joe, he was the next doorhouse man, you know, that he was hauling his grump, you know, to his, from the Salmon River there. He says, when he came down there, he says, his dogs got scared, he says, he just went wild. He says, he jumped on the brake when he had a heavy load, he says, and he just couldn't do nothing. The dogs just went wild. Well, I said, maybe there's not a moose. I said, probably a rabbit. I said, they'd go that way. I said, my dogs didn't, they were tired. I said, no, he said, no, there was something else, he says. You know what I think, he says, I think that Peter Turk buried that thing someplace there. I said, I don't know, I said, that the dog would make no difference to the dogs, I said. And if a dead man was on the trail there, I said, maybe more around it, or I said, he wouldn't pay no attention to the slope. But
what?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, that's
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's the fella, oh yeah, the thing I heard, I wouldn't know who said it, but I heard it in Flat, you know, that Pilak died at Holocaust when he confessed to the murder.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Mm. That's
the
next I heard.
It
wasn't Peter Turk that killed him.
Oh,
yeah.
It was Peter
Turk. Yeah, that's right. And he was dying. and he confessed that he killed the Finn there and buried him.
And buried him on the rainy path.
He laid it for him, or followed him, and shot him.
Oh, and they
were
there where he got the
dog. But the dog, that said they were French Joe, couldn't
constantly follow him.
Yeah.
Now that takes us back to your life story.
Yeah.
And you were on your way to Fairbanks from Flat with a sick wife.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, carry on.
Well, we had to pull out, and the whole flat, there was quite a lot of people there, the senior's office, and so I said, well, I know a lot of people, but I don't think not knowing, he'll never make it. And we said, so we're going out with a sick woman, you know, she didn't know that she was sick, but she didn't know that she was adopted, you know, and on two kids. And we had to go on. So we went along, you know, it was cold, it was cold.
Over the road, 40
below. Mm-hmm. 40 below when we left.
You had the two children with you too at that time?
Yes.
How old were your children?
One was 3.5 and one 2.5. They had to ride all the time, you know. She had one here and the other one in front. Yeah. And with an outfit like that, you got to get to a roadhouse.
Every night.
You can't.
Every night.
And I was out prospecting or so, didn't get to a cabin or a roadhouse. I didn't mind it. So.
Well, that took you from Flat to Tecotna?
Yeah, from Flat to the first stop was Schirmeyer's roadhouse.
Schirmeyer,
that was.
I remember him.
You remember him?
Yeah.
That there's what the money got lost, the $30,000.
The next roadhouse was what?
And the next roadhouse was burned down at that time. That was the. The Dittner Roadhouse, they call it, because it is on the Dittner River.
Dittner.
It burned down, and there was just a doghouse left. They had a kind of a cabin, a log cabin doghouse. We stayed there. But then, after that, we got to Ofer.
Ofer?
Yeah, we got to Ofer. And the next time to Tecotna. And then to McGrath.
Big River.
From
Big River.
Big River
between McGrath and the lake, huh?
Big River, and then the next one was Nicolai.
East Fork.
And Delight.
We were in Delight. Lone Star?
Yeah. On the Long Star before you come to the lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how much Stone was there then, wasn't he?
I don't remember.
He was the chief engineer at the Stone, I think. Norman Olson, one of those guys.
Yeah.
How many between the lake and Knights?
Knights, Lake Manchuman.
Roosevelt, and Diamond.
No.
Whistlepole. Hammersguard.
Hammersguard.
They're all right flat on the ground, aren't they?
Yeah.
We'll find
I
guess so.
Night's
still standing?
Oh, yeah.
Nights, I think nights.
Well, 20 miles, there was shelter. Dog houses. Comfortable. Yeah, actually, it was no short of travel in that route until after 1930 when the mail took, when the airplanes took over.
Yeah.
The spring of 31, I think, was the end of it.
Everyone went by dog team?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a sign on the every eagle's trade not to listen.
Suppose we could find that thing yet?
Where?
I don't know. That's a long time ago. Moved by 1929.
When we came out, Kammersgaard was in Ninana. Ed Jung, crashed up there. He had a plane up there on the ground.
Yeah.
Ed Jung, he was a roadhouse man when we came by there. Mm-hmm. He said that Kammersgaard is in Ninana, and that he stays until he come back. And he cooked we had supper and breakfast, you know.
Well, now let's get to Fairbanks with your wife. She's sick.
Oh yes, yeah. She's so finally got to Ninana, and then we went to Fairbanks first, and we heard down in Flat already that there was a very good doctor in Anchorage. We didn't know any doctors in Fairbanks. Nothing to do, you know. they was down the stand, so it's the older years, you know. And so we go to Anchorage.
From Nenana.
From Nenana. So we took the train then to, we was in Fairbanks first, and then we took the train.
Oh, the train was running then.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. This was in 25.
Oh, 25. I thought it was 21.
That's east north.
25. Mm-hmm. And the train started in
23. Yeah, and I went to, we know the Lira, they had the Seward dairy. And I went with the two kids to Seward.
Seward.
While my wife was in the hospital in Anchorage. Yeah. And then I wanted to come back up to Fairbanks. I had another partner, I had a claim out there, about Fox there, Fox. But she stayed down in the sewer there until May, and then come up. So that's what that was. She got operated in Anchorage, and so that became a ticket. Yeah, that was quite a trip.
So that puts you in Fox on a new claim.
Mm-hmm.
Above Fox.
Mm-hmm.
In 20...
Fox Gulch.
25.
That'd be 26. I was
working
out there, wasn't it? You was?
Yeah.
26.
Staying at
White House.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you stay there?
Well, I and Eddie Worden, we had three, four claims up in Fox Gulch, and Eddie Worden, he wanted to do something, and he thought that it's worthwhile doing something, and we ordered a pipeline, 1,000 feet of pipe, and monitor, and things, so then we made boxes, and we put up a house, you know, a lumber frame building for my wife, and there was a log cabin along there, where Eddie Worden lived in, you know. And we started trying to try out that county, and I worked about 2 months there, and I seen that it wouldn't work. I said, I got a family to raise, and I can't stay on this. I said, I'll turn it over to Eddie Worden. I said, this is nothing for me. I pulled out, and I went over to Domkirk. They were building the ditch there, and they had a diesel shovel there to dig, and I was the tender for the diesel shovel there, for the FE company. That was my first job for the FE company over on Domkirk, on the ditch then. That was in 46.
46.
26.
26.
26.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They put the tunnel through the hill there that summer?
That fall. I worked there on the wall side.
Mm-hmm.
The wall side was dry, and it was granite hard rocks, you know.
That tunnel,
yep,
under
tunnel.
The
mm-hmm.
saddle going over to
yeah,
Olin?
Right. Yeah.
Is that dome on the other end of the tunnel?
It comes out of vault.
Well, never know the name of those. Here's Fox, and you go up the canyon from Fox. What is canyon? What pup are you in?
That's Fox Gulch.
And the tunnel goes through the hill and comes out on Dome.
Ball.
Then it goes around the hill, and you cross it as you go down the hill with the highway.
Yeah.
It goes back in here. Is this Dome?
Dome.
That's Dome.
There's that long ridge that separates.
Yeah. Well, that's Vault. That's the other end, the north end of the tunnel.
That's Vault. Vault Creek.
Now, that's interesting. Now take us from there.
Well, I worked on the Vault Creek side, and we worked from the Fox Gulch side, you know. when the Fox Creek side was wet, water running down the big bank, but the other side, it was dry, but dust, you know, and I didn't work all winter there.
Was that by hand or machinery?
Well, we had an air compressor there. We worked with jackhammers, you know.
No, but I mean the ditch outside of the tunnel. Was that handwork?
The ditch?
Horse and Fresno scraper or what?
No, they had graders and things that too, you know, and
Well, what was your next job now?
Well, let's see now.
You left the FE company.
Yeah.
You had your family come up from Seward and join you.
Yeah. And I worked for the railroad one winter and one summer.
The Chattanooga Railroad?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
And they promised me all the work, you know. But if I was hitting the glaciers down, you know, there have been glaciers down. And taking ice and pitching glaciers in the winter for the railroad. And then they told me that if I would stay in the summertime, you know, on the section gang. Well, I said, if I got all the work, I said, I would stay, but otherwise, I was going to work for the FE company then. No, they promised me that the roadmaster come up, section boss said, and he tell him, but he promised me. But anyhow, I got, after freeze up, I got pumped off the job, you know.
Can you remember the foreman's name?
Yeah, the foreman's name was, his son, he had two boys, one worked in the First National Bank. What was his name?
Well, anyway, it's 10 o'clock, and it's late, and we'll sign you off, Mr. Sager.
Yeah.
And have you next meeting.